How is everybody this morning?
Fantastic.
Good. Who have you spoken to so far?
Everyone.
Oh, really? I'm the last one in. Have you a good time?
Yes.
Good. Thank you. Great. Lovely. Far away.
All right. So, can you tell us about the casting process? Did you have someone in mind for Cinderella, or...?
Well, I had an idea of how Cinderella should be, but we knew, in my experience, it was going to be like, I made a film of Thor, which took a long time to find the beautiful and sexy Chris Hemsworth, now officially the sexiest man in the world, I thought, well, I have good taste then, clearly, don't I? So we knew that it would take a while and that you had to really feel that the character, the actor, would, in this case, you just want to be with them, you know, you want to be in their company. Yeah, she had to be likable. You needed to want to spend those 90 minutes or whatever with her. And because of the way we were slightly reimagining the character's personality, that she needed to have, you know, a good sense of humor, a kind of what we were calling a kind of an approachable beauty, and kindness and passion and strength, and that could stand up, you know, in a scene with Miss Blanchett or Miss Bonham Carter, and who also just had a sort of simplicity without being, you know, sappy. A lot of had to tick a lot of boxes, so it was going to take a long time. And I heard Lily James's voice first. I thought, God, that's a beautiful voice. And then she was a beautiful girl. And then she was very patient across a lot of auditions and things. And eventually it just became clear that she was the one.
What was the most difficult scene to direct?
I think probably the ballroom sequence, because you knew there would be so much expectation on it. And you knew that, practically speaking, you were going to have 500 people, half of whom were going to be in corsets, and that was going to be a bit tricky. You know, you've got to get 500 people to the loo as well during the course of the day, and then get them back on set before wasting too much time. And I knew that the dancing and then the sort of staging and the sense of how opulent it was and getting a sense of the glamour and the flamboyance of it was important. I wanted to take people to the ball, but I also knew that, for me, the scene was just as much about his hand on the small of her back and the beginning of that dance. So it was trying to keep that big, large-scale ambitions with just wanting the human dynamic of the boy meets girl moment.
What brought you to the project?
I think it was the surprise of being asked. I hadn't long ago done Thor, and I did a film called Jack Ryan, and so I had a couple of quite boysy films, and being asked to do a girl's film, if that's not a stupid way of putting it, and a fairy tale, and such a famous one, and I remembered it from I remembered a couple of things from Cinderella. I loved the chase back from the palace at midnight. I really remember in the original animated film the stepmother coming out of the dark with two blazing green eyes, which she's lying in bed. Cinderella brings her some tea, so I remember it being a bit scary and but very exciting and fun. And I was very aware also, if you do a Disney film and you have a big responsibility, there's going to be a lot of kids seeing it for the first time, and they all know the story as well. I've never made a film where the lights go down and you realize that everybody from 5 to 95 knows what's going to happen next. So it's not about what happens next, it's about how you do what happens next. So that was very exciting.
So speaking of the original Disney animated film, and comparing it to this, there were a couple of things that I noticed, like with the mice. Mm-hmm. I could have sworn I heard sound bites from the original mice from the original animation. Is that? Am I wrong?
No.
So maybe.
No. Well, you know what we did? It sounds a bit daft, but we scripted the entire mice story through the movie. So Chris Weitz and I sat down and we wrote words, dialogue, for all four of the mice in every scene in which they appear. And then we recorded them with actors a couple of different ways. Sometimes we made the actors say it very, very, very slowly, so that when we then speeded it up to be in sort of mice squeak mode, you could just get half a hint of what they might do. So, for instance, Gus Gus at the end, when he finally is persuaded that he shouldn't eat the cheese and maybe he should jump on the back of the other three so they can open the window and they can hear Cinderella singing, he does something, and all right then. And there are a few little throwaway modern remarks like that. I don't think, although sometimes you do stuff unconsciously, I don't think that we went back and raided mice remarks from the original movie, but we do have those. There is a secret mouse play and screenplay inside the movie.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm a huge Cinderella fan, and it was refreshing to see the actor Phoenix James in the movie. Was that intentional? Because you never seen anything like him before. The guy who played the palace guard.
Oh, well. So which palace guard are you talking about?
It was the African-American.
Nonzo. You mean Nonzo, who plays the captain?
Nonzo. I thought his name was Phoenix James.
No, I don't think. He's Nonzo Anozie. Nonzo, N-O-N-S-O, A-N-O-Z-I-E.
Oh, I looked up the wrong person.
That's okay. No. I'm glad you saw another African American there somewhere. And there were enough of the beginnings of diversity. Nonzo is an actor who I worked with about 12 years ago in the theatre. He'd just come out of drama school. He's a man mountain. He's absolutely enormous fella and a darling bloke. And he's a wonderful actor. So he was also in my last film, Jack Ryan, and I knew that he would play. He would play this kind of oak tree of a guy with a real twinkle in his eye. And also, there's very few people who can stand up to Cate Blanchett and say, I'll tell you what to do, or I forbid it. And Cate Blanchett actually turns around and looks rather scared. So I knew that Nonzo would be able to do that. Okay. And he's a big, good-hearted guy, so he's a wonderful actor.
Thank you.
You're
in
welcome.
Regard to the locations that you chose for this, to film some of the palace interior in England. What was it from knowing those places offhand, saying, oh yeah, we have to use this place, or did you actually have locations managers source those places first?
You almost always have a location manager to whom you give a brief. And then they go off and help out. But ours being a small country, frankly, you end up knowing a few. And I know how I've done a few pictures with palaces in. I have my contacts, as it were. But essentially, of course, we built so much of it that we didn't do too much inside real palaces. So the whole of that ballroom was an entire construction on the 007 stage in Pinewood. But the outside of Cinderella's house was all built for real in a place called Black Park. And then, interestingly, the forest where the prince and Cinderella meet is in Windsor Great Park, which is essentially the Queen's back garden. She lives in Windsor Castle part of the time. So part of that park involves that group of oak trees, which are over 600 years old. So it was very nice to be able to say to Lily and Richard, you're going to do this magical scene in a magical place, because these oak trees were here when Shakespeare was alive. So that was really very sort of magical. And so we were around that area, the southeast part of England, around Windsor Castle. It was basically there and around, and there are some wonderful forests and beautiful spots to shoot.
Was the Royal Naval College used? Because it's listed in the IMDb that it was used, and the Clivedon House as well.
Well spotted, well researched. The Royal Naval College is used for one scene. You may know that location from a number of other films. They blow up quite a lot of it in the second Thor film. But in this case, we used a thing called the Paint Hall. It's a massive, massive hall, and it's the scene in which the two boys' fence is in the Paint Hall at the Royal Naval College. And Clivedon, actually, which we were going to shoot him, we didn't shoot him, but we did. I think we were inspired for the design of the clock tower by a clock tower that lives in the real grounds of Clivedon House, which is also in near Pinewood Studios.
I just want to say that as a mother of little girls and small children, I found this movie so magical that I grew up with the original Disney Cinderella, and then to see it play on stage, on the screen, as it almost came alive. It was like you were able to go into the old movie and just bring it alive in such a magical way. It was amazing.
Thank you. Something so unexpected.
Yet you did it so flawlessly, even with the characters you chose and everybody. It was amazing. I just had to say that.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm so excited to show it to my children now. Oh. And I've been recommending it just because of the magic and the innocence you put into it. It wasn't like a movie. You know, it's a movie you can show, like you said, from 5 to 95, and everybody will still feel that emotional gut-wrenching.
Well, I think so. I mean, amongst the toughest things we did, it'd be interesting now if you go back and look at the 1950 animated picture, because you may be surprised at how far we depart in a strange way. I think we absolutely embrace the spirit of it, and on a couple of occasions we really sort of hint at a couple of shots. But I think the real sort of reinvention is the character of Cinderella and her kind of proactiveness. You know,
yes.
She doesn't just wait around. But also this uncynical belief in the power of kindness and courage. And one of the things we really wanted to do was just make sure that was not something that the kids were being sort of lectured with, that they could, it was done lightly enough from a character who seemed to embody it in a way that still allowed her to be happy and free and intelligent and smart and, you know, be fun. I mean, not suddenly be all self-righteous and pious and everything. So I think that was something we tried very hard to do. And the hardest decision in the whole movie was, I know it's a bit of a Disney cliche because they've been doing it since Bambi, was losing parents, as you will have spotted. We got 3 out of 4 of the parents have gone. I feel responsible for a kind of attack on the grown-ups. But it's tough, you know. I mean, it's tough, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful in the first 10 minutes where Mum goes, my God, you see the shoulders heave. You sit at the back of the auditorium and you see a lot of arms go around, you know, small people either reach up or vice versa. And by the time son loses dad, the 3/4 of the way through the movie, that's a... when you see the boys in the doing that as well, it's so we didn't want to. We didn't want to traumatize young people, but at the same time, as I was mentioning earlier, you know, this sort of responsibility you have if you get the privilege of making a Disney movie is there is a way to maybe just find a compassionate way to talk about things that include some of the difficult things that life throws up, as long as you know it can be done lightly and if you know there's lots of entertainment.